Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I am pleased to be joined by Elizabeth, who is here to talk to us about the practice of transcending fear. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hey, Ashwini, thanks.
So, Elizabeth, I know you attended the Transcending Fear Retreat and are actually planning to do it again in Bethlehem shortly in September, and I was wondering if you could say a little bit perhaps about what you saw in that retreat and how you're practicing with it. I know you have some fascinating content that you've taken on for this workshop.
Yeah, there were a lot of great teachings that were brand new to me, looking at fear and practicing with fear in a completely different way. There were a lot of teachings about fear is ego fear, and we're always conditioned to be afraid. We aren't born afraid. And some of the tools ego fear uses to control us, such as the never explicitly stated message, you won't be able to stand it. That's like an example of ego fear controls.
So let me just reflect that, because they're all such fabulous teachings, as you said. So the first one you talked about was that we're not born afraid, we're conditioned to being afraid, and that fear is a way for ego to control us.
Yes,
wow. And how have you been practicing with that, Elizabeth?
Well, I have a little goldfish pond of pet goldfish, and a northern water snake moved in, and we call him Bamboozler because he's the bamboozler of fear. The northern water snake moved in, Bamboozler, and he's not a docile snake like a land snake. He's not a chill snake. He's more like a skittish biter. And he came at me and attacked me one day when I was enjoying the pond, you know, with my fish. And he moved in and was eating the fish and then had juvenile babies. When I came back from the Transcending Fear workshop, I tried just throwing everything I could about watching the process of fear so that I could see how to transcend it.
So basically, the snake that you call a bamboozler moved into your goldfish pond, and you are looking at the process of fear around the snake. And because I project from what you're saying that the snake produces a huge amount of fear. And you've decided that is your... Go ahead.
Yeah, a huge amount of fear, and but like distress and suffering because his mannerisms and his personality, he's very jumpy and his movements are very creepy and threatening to me because it's like lightning quick and just this sudden undulating, curling, wiggling, like it just was causing me so much distress and about it.
So there's a process of fear. There's not just a process of fear, but there is a process of an intense amount of suffering and disturbance because of what gets triggered for you around having to coexist with the snake in your goldfish pond.
Yes,
and you were determined to work with it. Yeah, not to avoid it, not to get rid of it, not to do anything about the circumstances, but to actually look at your process in order to get beyond being controlled by fear.
Right, because I was sort of in between a rock and a hard place. He's very, very hard to catch because he's lightning quick. And I had to take care of my goldfish. And so I just tried to deal with the process of fear and watching it and seeing how far I could get in transcending it.
And what have you noticed? And what tools have you been using?
Well, when I started watching the process, one thing I noticed was because his defense mechanism is to stay still, and he thinks you don't see him, and that's how he stays safe until you're like right on the top of him, and then he makes this like hypermanic, lightning quick kind of bizarre. He just goes bonkers and goes into the water and starts curling around and undulating, and so I never knew where he was or at what point it was going to happen. And I would lose my awareness and come to, you know, screaming my head off.
It's so like conditioning, right, Elizabeth, the metaphor of the snake, and it's no coincidence that you're calling him the bamboozler, because we don't know where it's going to get us. And so what I project you're saying is there's a tremendous amount of awareness and attention you have to pay at all times in order to be present when he sneaks up on you. And that when you, what you're noticing is that the way you go into that process of fear and that freak out is really when you've lost your awareness, or the awareness has collapsed, and you're not here and present for when he shows up and does his little defense moves.
Exactly. So at one point I took an orange traffic cone and I put it right by the pond, and I wrote on the orange traffic cone, koan of collapsed awareness. The startle response and, you know, the freak out and the startle response would happen so quickly that, you know, I would lose all my awareness. So I have the orange traffic cone there by the side.
So that some practice, some way of staying present as you approach the pond, because what you notice is that the awareness has collapsed and you need to support yourself not to go immediately to that conditioned reaction of freaking out and getting afraid or going into that suffering and disturbing process.
Right. Exactly. I had to keep alert to what was going on to see the thing I needed to see, that I thought, like, if I can really see through this, then I can, you know, that's the only help that I can get at this point.
So it's like a process map that you have to pay very close attention, and as you watch the process, you recognize that there is a moment of a loss of awareness that meant that when the snake attacked you or did its defense mechanism, then it led to a further loss of awareness and put you into that fear state, into that panic state, into that suffering state. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It put me in a state of collapsed awareness, so that, like, hours, for the whole rest of the day and night, I would be just, like, shot. I would just be obsessed and upset and just collapsed awareness.
And did you record and listen, or did you have a little mantra or something that assisted you to stay present as you moved up to the goldfish pond?
You know, at one point when I figured, like, I felt like there's no way I cannot freak out in this situation. I started saying reassurances, like when I went down to the pond, I would start saying, it's okay. It's okay if we freak out. It's okay if we have a meltdown, and keep repeating that while I was, like, cleaning the pond filter or feeding the fish or whatever I couldn't avoid doing. I would keep saying that. So then if I did have a freak out with Bamboozler, then I was closer to the mentor and less identified.
So one of the tools we look at from the fear book is that one of the ways to work with fear is to go from being the person who is afraid to the person who is mentoring the person who is afraid. And so in that way of repeating reassurances, then what you were practicing was that movement. And what you discovered is that as you moved, as you did that practice, when when the attack happened, within quotes, you were much, much closer to compassion and not to a collapsed awareness state.
Yeah. And I also practice with trying to be go from prey to predator mode. One day I went down with the net, and I was like, that's it, I'm catching you, I'm relocating you. And I tried to, like, be identified with the, you know, predator and the one with power. And I caught him in the net and tried to drag him away. But I was really terrified, and I felt like I was going to have a nervous breakdown. Like, I didn't feel very empowered at the end of it.
Well, that's also a process that's interesting, right? That we practice, I think something that Cherry said in the workshop that was a very powerful teaching is, instead of being hunted by fear, we can become the person who's hunting fear. And so you made that movement and you practiced that movement and noticed everything that happened with that experience, right? Which I project was, yes, there is that movement of moving towards the predator, but a completely different response to what happened to you as a consequence, and having to practice with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Elizabeth, to me, it's such an inspiring practice story, because, first of all, the content to most of us would feel so creepy, but you decided to take it on, and you decided to work on your process with it, and you used all the tools that you had on the retreat, or you learned on the retreat, and I project this is an ongoing workshop, because to me, the metaphor of the snake is like conditioning, right? We're constantly working with that system that's trying to control us, make us afraid, make us feel small, but to take it on is what spiritual practice is all about, and I project that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I want to be, like they said in the workshop, that if we keep facing our fears down and prove ego wrong and prove that we did survive it and we were able to stand it, then we face down our fears. And I haven't yet gotten to that point where I faced them down and said I can stand it and survive.
Yeah, So you're pointing to that teaching we started off with, right? That what it's really telling us that we're afraid of is the sensations and experiences, the sensation in our body that we can't stand. And so what you're proving to yourself in this practice is that you are going to face the fear, so you can take that stand, and very wisely saying that it's not something that you have accomplished, but you're right there with it. And I know you've got your next practice as being in a state of inquiry, right? Interest in exploring what fear is and how you feel in those sensations. And so it's an ongoing workshop.
Yes, right. The guidance I got next was to take the recorder down to the pond and talk about my moment-to-moment experience of what I'm experiencing when I'm, you know, anxious and when I'm having the anticipatory anxiety and when the thing actually jumps out and everything.
Truly, truly a hero's journey. Well, I just noticed, Elizabeth, that we're at the top of the hour and we have to turn over the show to Michael and Sherry, but deep, deep gusto for sharing your story with us. I found it very inspiring talking to you about it, and I hope everyone attends the retreat so they could have the same magnificent practice workshop that you're having.
Well, thanks for your support and for Sangha's support.
Thanks, Elizabeth. See you in Bethlehem, and hope to see everyone else. I think the retreat's between September 1st and September 6th. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Take care. And Michael, let me turn the show over to you and Cherry.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, Elizabeth. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. That was fun, huh?
Yes, it was. Very exciting.
Yes. Oh, the bamboozle snake. Oh, my gosh. That's kind of, for a lot of people, that'd be one of your worst. That's the stuff of nightmares.
Yes, yes. And one thing I loved about that story is that it's one thing to know about fear on an intellectual level.
Yes.
And then, you know, to have the practice and to need to work with the fear directly is, you know, that's where the real learning comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the steps that Elizabeth and Ashwini went through. So now I'm here. And
yes.
This is what's going on, and this is what I have to practice with. And then there's going to be a next step, and this is where we are now, and this is what there is to practice with now. We just keep going through it until we get to the other side. And yes. that realization, knowledge that is what will happen. If we stick with it, that is what will happen. It's inevitable. It's a given.
Yes, yes, yes. And the great thing at that point is that the learning, the experience, is no longer intellectual. You know, I went to I had the experience. I know what it's
yes.
like to move beyond the fear.
That's right. And once I've done it, now instead of hoping for something and doubting,
yes.
listening to the voices that want me to doubt that it's possible, I've had the experience. And now I'm going to practice repeating an experience that I've already
yes.
had. Completely different
yes.
place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very exciting. Empowering.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping people will, in fact, say, well, I want to do that and join us
that.
In Bethlehem. Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some announcements here.
All right. I bet one of them is about a fear retreat in Bethlehem.
Yes, one of them is. Yes, indeed.
Coincidentally.
Coincidentally. Why don't I speak to that one first? The process
right.
of fear is how our life energy is used by ego to maintain the ego. You, Sherry, and Ashwini are leading a powerful experience of going beyond the limits of fear at the Transcending Fear Retreat, September 1st through 6th in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. It's time to break free of the control imposed by egocentric karmic conditioning / self-hate and practice life's joy.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Elizabeth told us.
Just like that. And even if the bamboozle snake comes at you, you're going to have the tools to face it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you, Sherry, will lead two workshops this Sunday, July 30th, at our new center in the Bay Area of San Francisco. The morning
mm-hmm.
workshop, Who Says So?, will look at what's possible if we aren't living in ego's fear-mongering version of reality. In the afternoon, a get-out-of-jail-free card workshop will explore how identifying with the I prevents us from pursuing our heart's desire. And don't forget to check out the full schedule of yoga classes, groups, and meditation sessions at Center.
Mm-hmm.
Our deep identification with me, the illusion of a self separate from life, masks our ability to be present to that which animates all as our true nature. Join Sherry in an email class, August 1st through 25th, for an engaging exploration of how our identification with all enneatypes prevents us from directly experiencing authenticity.
Don't you love that? Because it's not an identification with your enneatype. It's an identification with all of them, right?
Yes,
so.
And the thing I love about the topic of this is that it would never have occurred to me because
right.
it was always my enneatype and basically what's wrong with me for being that enneatype.
Right.
And, yeah.
And yeah, how that explains what's wrong with me.
And now it's like, no, this is practice. And so basically we turn the whole thing upside down, mix it all around, and come at it from a fresh perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's good. I think it's going to produce a lot of understanding and compassion for one another, not just ourselves, yeah. But for one another. We look at each other and go, ooh, you're all nine too, huh? Wow, it's a rough road.
Yeah.
But we're walking it together.
Yes, as always.
Mm-hmm.
Recording and listening training is a 6-week conference call retreat for teaching 6 key skills of this valuable practice tool. We think you will find these calls to be fun, experiential, and transformative, whether you are a new practitioner or an old timer. 2 new classes start August 28th and 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
We got a lot going on, don't we? Good.
We always have a lot going on.
We always have a lot going on. You know, if we're, it's like that little saying, you know, if we're suffering, it's because we're choosing something over ending suffering, because, boy, there is just a ton of support for ending suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there
mm-hmm.
is.
Yeah.
If you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. That will put you in the queue. And a 5-minute conversation on one topic is really helpful. Okay, Sherry, you ready?
Ready.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Megan calling from Maryland.
Hello, Megan.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't hang up, I think.
Maybe. We'll see. The jury's out. What's going on?
Well, first, I'm so happy that I called in at all. The full workshop going on here of, like, you're not prepared, you're not going to know what to say, it's going to be terrible, let's practice. And it turns out every time I practice with conditioning, the outcome is really quite terrible.
So when you practice the way conditioning encourages you to practice, it's not good.
Yeah, like rehearsing. Like we'll start uh-huh. down, okay, you could talk about this. And so we start
uh-huh.
like imagining how that would go. And after
maybe you should say that. Maybe that would
yeah.
be better. Uh-huh. Oh, but no, because, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we can relate.
Yeah. So, and it reminded me, as I was sort of watching the process happen in waiting for the call to start, it's very much paralleling what conditioning is doing in general, which is you're not prepared. Something terrible is going to happen as a result. Let me help
uh-huh.
you prepare.
Let me worry about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get some anxiety going. That'll help you. That'll help you get ready. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's just not true, is it?
Well, no, it's not true, and I've seen through it. This is where I feel like, you know, there's that spiral thing where, like, I've been here and then seen through it, and now I'm back here, and it just seems really compelling again.
Oh, yes. Okay. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then, of course, now this is all projection, but then the voices want to talk to you about, what is the matter with you?
Oh,
right?
My gosh.
Because
it has.
You've seen this.
Yes. And it has a lot of information about why we're back here, like the choices I've made that have put us back here.
Oh, gosh. So it's, let me see. You mean it's your fault?
Surprisingly. Surprisingly.
Would that be what it wants you to talk about with it? How, and review all of your bad decisions and point out again how none of this would be happening if you had, what, listened to it? Which, oh, wait, you were listening to it, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's so good to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so helpful to see. And so now, Megan, that you're here again in this place, and obviously you are not here again, right?
That's right.
Because you are seeing this with a clarity that was not there the last time that you were in this place. So, therefore, you are actually not in this place.
Right.
Yeah. And so now that you're here, are you aware of how different you are now in this place?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what are
it's
some
almost
of those
like,
differences?
Well, mm-hmm. It's almost like going above water and underwater. Like it's compelling yeah. and I'm in it, and then I pop up and I'm like, oh,
yep.
this uh-huh. is ridiculous. And I'm out of it,
yes.
and then I'm back under, and uh-huh. then I'm back up, and it's sort of like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. And when you're under, that's when it wants to talk to you about how awful it is that you're here, and it's your fault, and if you hadn't, but you did, and all of those kinds of things. And then you pop out, and not only do you see that, well, that's ridiculous, the whole thing is made up, but you're seeing the process of how you're being dragged under and what you're being told when you're dragged under, and then you're seeing the process of popping up out of it and seeing through it.
And it's just like the sun coming up. It's like just this smile on my face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we realize what's going on in the way that you're realizing it, then we can be really grateful that it's happening.
Yeah.
Because it's like... And it is exactly like this. I guess it's a big bamboozle where it's the con artist. And so, you know, we fall for a con over and over and over. And, of course, every time we fall for it, then we get brought into conscious awareness to be beaten up for having fallen for it again. Until finally we get to that place of, well, you know, I think there really is something wrong with me, because how can I keep falling for the same thing over and over and over? And mm-hmm. at the place where you're describing, where you are in practice right now, the con artist is actually showing you the con. Doesn't intend to, doesn't mean to, wouldn't want to, but is, because you're paying attention. You're no longer just going under, going unconscious, having no idea. You get up above water again, and basically a big hand comes down on your head, pushes you back under again, and you're just completely lost, basically. Mm-hmm. That's not what's going on at all. The mm-hmm. con artist is showing you the con as the con is being done to you.
And then it
That's
tells me
position.
I must want to be suffering, that, you know, I see it so clearly, and I do,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm choosing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're choosing to see it all.
Mm.
That's what you're choosing. You're choosing to
yeah.
see it all. And when you have really seen it all, when the whole thing is done, then it'll be done. But since it's not done, then you can know it's not done, right? So as long as there's more for you to see, you'll keep being in this place. Does that mean you're choosing it? It's kind of like you decided to get a degree in conversational Swahili, and the voices would really like to point out that you're not proficient yet. And why don't you just give up, and why don't you quit? And you must enjoy failure, because you keep being in this. But you have a commitment to proficiency. And so you're going to keep studying and practicing and studying and practicing until you're proficient. And mm-hmm. then you will continue to to study and practice, because that's just what you want to do, because this is the thing that you committed to doing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So do you choose suffering? There's a way in which we could say, I would say it, I would certainly say it, yes, I do, for as long as suffering is possible. Yep, I do, because I want to see everything about it. I don't want to get magically popped into some happy place and so that the voices can say, oh, this is great, you've arrived, only to be jerked out of that, right? Because I'm not finished. I haven't seen it all. So, yeah, I choose to be with everything that is unfinished until it's finished.
Yep.
That'll throw them, Megan, when they say, well, you must be choosing it. And you say, well, yes, of course I am, because I want to get finished with this. Yes, of course I'm choosing it.
They're already very quiet.
Silence. Yes, exactly. Yeah, we don't want to be having this conversation. Yeah.
Mm.
That's great.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're in a perfect place. You are so welcome.
Gosho.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Megan. Sherry, that was fascinating there. The way you two approached it is you took away all of conditioning's ability to torture her.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's just our being convinced that there's something wrong. That's what it's always going for, right? There's something wrong. And the more we get it that there isn't anything wrong with this, okay? And the piece of it that I think is most important for us all to get, is that the voices would want Megan to believe you're in the same place. But Megan's not in the same place. She's not even close to the same place, right? Because Megan is watching this whole thing happen. She is in awareness, watching ego try to do what it's always been able to do and get away with. That's a whole different world.
Yes. And as you're always reminding us, not to look to conditioning to evaluate my awareness practice.
Right. Yeah. Conditioning is not a good Zen master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good. We have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Art and Chrissy in Maryland.
Well, hello.
Hi, Art and Chrissy.
Hi.
How are you two doing?
We're doing great. How are you guys?
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Good.
I'll speak for Michael. I know he's excellent, too.
Oh, that's great. Hey, so I've been feeling like a practice flunky because I haven't been out to there is nothing wrong with your retreat yet.
Emphasis on yet.
Yeah.
It will happen, you know.
Yeah, that terrifies ego.
Oh, of course it does. That's the primary reason to do it.
Yeah.
That's, in fact, if you read my recent newsletter article, that was the thing. There's this retreat that I'm doing, and I said, that's fine. If you decide for whatever reason you don't want to do that retreat, that's all right. But find something that terrifies ego to the point that it's doing everything it can to talk you out of whatever that is. Because then it's right where Megan is. Then we have a chance to see how it does what it does. If we don't challenge it, then it's great. It's like it's that con artist or the magician. You know, it does what it does. Nobody's paying any attention. Nobody's challenging it. So it can just, it can even be completely sloppy. It doesn't matter. The con artist comes up and can basically say, give me all your money. The person says, oh, okay. That's the sophistication of the con. Once people are just used to doing whatever the voices in their head tell them to do. So as soon as we challenge that, do something that those conditioned voices who just start screaming about, okay, now we're seeing how it does it. Oh, that's how it's always controlled me. I just do something it doesn't like, and it starts screaming, and I'm supposed to be afraid, and then do what it tells me. Oh, I'm not going to do that anymore. Now we're practicing.
Yeah. hey, so we want to figure out when it's going to be in the spring. I know the schedule doesn't come out until like December, does it?
That's correct. In November, we plan the next year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
But you can always join us in Bethlehem.
Is that this fall?
Yeah, September.
Why didn't I see that? Why didn't we? Oh, you saw
I
it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Oh.
I don't know.
We're
practically coming to your backyard.
Well, that's good. Well, we figured that we'd have to do the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat first.
The whole 7 days.
Oh, no. You can tackle fear. That once you get fear in your rearview mirror, then you coming to There's Nothing Wrong With You will just be icing on the cake.
It'd be a little more convincing, wouldn't it?
You okay. would know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, Sherry.
That was easy. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks. You
see you there.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Art and Chrissy. And Sherry, I have another caller here for us.
All right. That was fun. People can just call us up and we invite them to a retreat and they say, okay, and then we get together. What a sangha moment.
Yes, great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And next caller.
Who you got now?
You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta.
Well, hello, Greta.
Hi. Well, been enjoying the calls and having my own workshop with conditioning. The story about the snake was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I wondered if anybody else was going, ooh, that argues against the goldfish pond.
Yeah, we can look at it metaphorically, of course.
Yes, we certainly can.
Yeah, so I have been looking at how everything kind of comes together. So there's something that I feel like I really want to do. And I did it for a couple, I had some success doing it, and it's something I don't know how to do. So I'm just learning and practicing. And I was getting lit up, it was really feeling like, well, this is exciting, I'm exploring, I'm learning. And what I noticed, of course, is a little way down the track, it was being taken away from me by the conversation and then the self-hate.
Uh-huh.
And what I saw was how life was really setting things up so that I could see it. And as we talked about, not with the first caller, you said something about, yeah, I want to stay with this conditioning till I can see everything, and then it's going to lose its charge. It's going to lose its power over me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to several recent open airs, and you actually laid out the steps with several callers about going to take on the process of what I want to do, and then recording and listening about it, staying really present to it, and just kind of working my way through it and doing it until I see everything there is to see about it.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, what makes that so difficult is that conditioning is just fighting every inch of the way. The first thing that stops almost everybody is they get talked out of doing it. Right? So, you know, I'm all excited. Okay, I can see this. I can see how this is going to work. And then the campaign starts. No, 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 you're not going to do that. No, no, I don't want to. It's too hard. It's stupid. It's not going to work. You've tried stuff like this before. Nothing like this ever works. You can't do it. And the person finally just gives in and says, okay. Doesn't even try it. Doesn't even get started.
Right, right. So I see that the ability for it to take away, and I'm making the and actually I want to record a report on a practice success, because I feel like it informs this whole process. And that practice success was in another area where, you know, conditioning would say I'm not. The commitment was just to write 2 lines a day. And I've been very successful at keeping that commitment because, and this is something I know you said in the past, it's a manageable chunk, right? It doesn't say write 2 novels a day.
Right.
It says write
two lines. Paragraphs. Right.
Right. And it could be as simple as, you know, I had spaghetti for dinner. It tasted good. It doesn't matter what they are. It's the process of putting the pen to the paper to write it.
Right. It's Ashwini talking about, you know, you get out of bed and you tap your head 3 times, or you make gusto to your front door when you leave the house. The content doesn't have to be brilliant. It's sticking to the commitment that changes us.
Yeah, yeah. So what I see about all of this, any commitment, is where I just, you know, when I talk to you about it, my heart just kind of swells up, and I really want for this human being to be able to have that part of the life that she wants, you know, to be able to do these things she says she wants to do because they feel good, they give pleasure and joy, and to not accept that limitation and to not collude and argue for the limitation, but to just say, you know, we're going to see, we're going to suffer, we're going to whatever, until it just doesn't hold up any longer.
Yeah. Till I'm not being victimized any longer.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, Greta, that's the thing that so many people don't get, because there's that deep belief that if I make my life small enough, I can be safe. If I make my life small enough, the voices won't beat me up. But you know, as soon as you realize, but wait a minute, that is not a joyful ambition. You know, to live such a small, controlled life that the negative voices in my head don't say mean things to me. Wow. The worst has already happened.
Yeah,
They've already taken my life.
It doesn't work.
My life is already over.
Right.
No,
I mean,
no,
it still doesn't work. Because it has to get smaller and smaller. And as you point out, well, you'll quit or you'll kill yourself because, you know, you can't even eat your toast right because it's going to have something to say about how you brush your teeth or your toast. Or it just goes down till there's nothing left.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, it's promising but if you take on anything else, it'll be worse. And we have to get it. No, bad is bad. Bad is bad. there is no worse. Being controlled in that way, that's as worse as it gets. And what you just pointed out is the thing we have to know about that. So I could either decide I'm going to start my own business, or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to move to Tahiti, or I'm going to, you know, whatever it is that I'm going to do, and I will get the same pushback that I would get if I decided I was going to get an automatic toothbrush instead of just a little cheapy thing that I hold in my hand, right? It's going to have the same opinions about me that it's going to express. It's not going to be any worse if I move to Tahiti than if I just want to join a gym. All the same thing.
Right. And, you know, in your instruction to another caller, you talked about, you know, seeing the process, recording about it, mapping it out, looking at it, and that, you know, if we just stick with it, there's, you know, we're putting conditioning under that magnifying glass. And
yes.
And the way I see what we've talked about in practice is then I get to not only see how it's controlling this, it's controlling all these other places. And I've gotten these glimmers of it, and that makes me really want to understand, you know, really want to see through it because it has every, I mean, it, even though it may, you know, we might succeed over here, over there, it feels like we just bump into it everywhere where we don't think because suddenly see it. And
That's right. And so what you're describing, and this is the, I hope this is where the real focus that we have for the coming year is ceasing to look through conditioning and really starting to look at conditioning. So somebody walks by me on the street and I hear in my head, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. And instead of thinking I thought that, and that was in my head because I generated it, starting to look at it just as if somebody next to me had said it.
Yes. Yeah.
So taking no ownership of it whatsoever. It, there's that much distance as if that person standing next to me had just said that. And if they did, I would find it interesting, but I wouldn't think it was mine.
Right, right.
And that's the movement that we need to make.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like I get that, especially in relation to things like that outside me, because it seems like left field. But it's the looking through that set of eyes at myself that's where I believe.
At her. Her. Looking at her.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep, but it's the same process, right?
Yes.
Because no matter what it is, it's starting. It's funny that because there's no language that I know of for the movement that we're talking about making, where you're actually turning and looking at what's happening inside your head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in a guided image, we'll do a little centering thing, and one of the things I like to say to people, so you're looking at your body and you're looking at your emotions and then you're looking at your mind. And I'll ask, so where are you when you're able to watch your mind? And a lot of times for people it's kind of a how is that possible? And there's a feeling of, that's true. I wasn't inside it. I was actually outside it looking at it. Right? And that's the distance that we're going for, the moving back that is so crucial for us in practice.
Yeah, I see what you're pointing at, and so that just sort of raises another question. What I feel like I've been stepping back into when I hear a lot of that kind of conversation is something else you've been pointing to a lot, which is love. So if I hear nit, 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 it's like love more, love more, love more. You know, that's a little mantra I have, you know. What does this situation need? What does this person need? What does anything need? Mm-hmm. Love.
Mm-hmm.
And so substituting looking through that condition lens and stepping back into the love glasses, if you will, and just say, you know, because really not brokering conditioned mind and just saying, I'm not having that conversation because what
That's
the situation
right.
asks for is love.
That's right. So you are stepping back and looking at what goes on in conditioned mind, and then what drops in for you is, oh, what's needed is love. And you can see that those are two completely different processes, different situations. Again, as if what's happening in quotes, your head is happening in somebody else. So you watch two people having a conversation, and one of them is saying blah 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 blah, and the other is saying, "Well, I don't think so. I don't think you should be that way." Right? You're watching it, and what occurs to you in awareness is, "Oh, what's needed here is more love." And that's the relationship that we're developing with, in quotes, ourself.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, good, so I just feel like I'm kind of in this I don't know place, just sort of this gray, you know, going in and going out and looking at it and committing to it and just, you know, take the next step. Yeah.
Yep, just like Megan.
Yep,
you're going
exactly.
in and out. She's going up and down above the water to under the water. And that's what we're doing. Here, gone. Here, gone. Here, gone. But the thing is, it's a very different place to realize that's what's happening to me. Here, gone. Here, gone. Remember when it was just gone and didn't know it? Underwater and had no idea? I can remember those days.
Oh, for sure, like yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, but it's different, isn't it? Because, it's different. Not in the minute when you're gone. Yes, we can be completely gone when we're gone. But it's the context. It's the perspective that knows, I'm gone, I'm here. Gone, here. Gone, here. In, out, up, down, right? There's an ability to see that movement, not just trapped with no idea that anything else is possible. So it's a completely different world.
Right.
And everybody
we're not
who's
trapped.
Practicing, everybody who's practicing knows that. That's why we practice. And the voices, of course, still want us to believe, oh, no, you don't get it. You're really stuck. You don't know what's... that's not true at all. If I didn't know in the way those voices want me to believe I don't know, I wouldn't be practicing.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. And I just want to one quick comment about practice support, because that's the thing that allows us to pull ourselves out of the black hole should we fall into it, is not in this month's monastery newsletter, but the previous month, where it listed probably like 40 different practice opportunities, so that more than 24 hours a day we have some opportunity to connect and practice. When I saw that list, I was so amazed. I just said, holy cow, look at all of those things that we can do together that support us.
I had the same reaction, Greta. You know, it's like read to 10 and then the list just goes on and on and on. Wow, that is astounding. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because we know,
gratitude,
right?
From that.
What's needed is more love. And so that's what we're doing together, is providing more love. Receiving, creating, having, giving more love. Yep. Thank you, Greta.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. Thank you for bringing more love. More love. And Sherry, we are going to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we will be back.
All right.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that we could live in a conversation about what is true, what is real, what is arising in life in the moment, instead of with the voices of karmic conditioning. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We now have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report finding refuge in my own voice, strengthening the awareness of the mentor, and experiencing the 6 weeks as transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply go to livingcompassion.org. Click on Practice to find 2017 programs and then Recording and Listening Training. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence this year with the support of Recording and Listening.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lucinda from Lake Tahoe.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How
you doing?
I am so enjoying, I've heard this so many times where each caller, previous caller, has added to my answer, you know?
Yeah. So, did somebody call ahead and tell everybody, this is what I want to talk, this show is for Lucinda. So everybody talk about her issues.
I think that's
I know
what
it can
happened.
Seem that way. Mm-hmm. It feels that way.
That's what happened. And I'm so grateful to all the previous callers for answering that the call to call.
Yes. Well, so, you know, if I may, before you go on, because it can sound like we're playing, it sounds like we're kidding, but the more we pay attention, the more we realize we would be hard-pressed to make an argument that that's not what's happening. Now, did a call go out? No. But does life happen that way? Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
When we're paying attention, when we're here, we realize everything seems perfectly orchestrated to provide me with exactly what I need in every moment. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. What I'm experiencing now is fear, so we're on that theme, that is around a recurrence of a physical symptom after having recovered from a cancer experience. So I'm back to the fear that with a shift in nuance, for sure, but back to that level of fear of physical pain and suffering, you know? And it's just like the snake. It's just like, you know, oh, sorry, big truck going by. It's just that same, and there it was in your peace quote, I think, for today, about how it's all about me all of a sudden. And making this shift from believing the conditioning and being in that place to looking at her and what she's experiencing and what she needs, and it's just really been up and down and in and out, just as Megan and Greta.
So if I'm understanding, so you're going along, and she has had very real experiences that produced physical pain physical pain and difficulty, great difficulty. And so there she is, and there's wanting to be with her and open to her and sensitive and supportive. And then here comes ego, right? And ego, we have that strong sense in these situations, ego doesn't care a thing about her. Ego just wants to be center stage. And, of course, ego wants to present itself as, no, that's me. I have this situation. I had that experience with cancer. I have this, and we realize, no, it's not. That's not her. That's this attention-grabbing, fear-mongering, suffering-producing entity that is not her. Did I kind of?
Yes.
Is that kind of on target or?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And there is a way to tell, you know, because the voice, the marauder, it definitely wears different clothes, produces different physical sensations, has a different language, you know, the whole bit.
And it's so when we say egocentric karmic conditioning, you can really feel the egocentric aspect of it.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
It's
not you, and it's not her. Where we step back and we see all of these different players and able to see how ego is only interested in itself. And it'll do anything to anybody as long as it gets to be center stage, get all of the attention for itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting to see all the players. And I have, I just finished the recording and listening group training and have been recording about this and listening. It is very helpful. It's very helpful. And I've been inspired.
Shockingly helpful, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it's beyond surprising. It is shocking that something like that could be that level of support. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's true.
And just listening to myself, I mean, not even counting, replying the two-handed process or anything like that, just listening to myself has been so helpful.
Well, on every level. It's why I really hope this catches on and little kids can grow up with it, because how many of us have wished all of our lives that somebody would listen to us and hear us, that somebody would recognize us, would see us in that deep, intimate way. And here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. We have that.
It's really something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding the courage to proceed is how the conditioning is challenging me. Just like the previous caller, it's the courage that is what I'm told I won't have, you know,
That you won't have the courage to face this.
Right, yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And to do this, to move through it.
Uh-huh.
And be with it, you know.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet, I project that on a level much deeper than that, you know you have that courage.
Yeah. Well, I've been here before, in a way, you know, when I first felt, you know, when I first went through this process, only I didn't have this practice.
Yeah.
Or I found it in my process. I found the practice during the process. And so now I'm calling on, you know, I can't wait to go to that newsletter and look at the 44 ways or whatever that there are to support practice, because I'm sure I could fill a few more hours anyway.
Yes. And well, and that's what you want, right? We'll talk about her, because it's actually not you, you know, any more than it is ego who's doing this, who's going through this, if you know what I mean. Because there's the person who has been through it before, has practice, has some distance, is not the person who wakes up at 3 a.m. with that familiar icy hand around the spine, you know, just
right.
terrified. And so she's the one that you want to be there for, that you want to be in practice so that you can be there for her.
Yes.
Yeah. All these tools that you want to make them available. You want to have them for you so you can be there for her.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, you are so welcome. Well, you know, we're here. So there you are.
I know where to find you.
Yeah, that's right. You know where we live even, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So make use of us, okay? Make
yes.
use of us.
Yes.
All right.
Thank
Good.
You.
Thank you, Lucinda.
Thanks for joining us, Lucinda. Another fascinating conversation, Sherry. Wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's such an important distinction that it's hard enough for us to realize that I am not the ego, that there is an ego I that is not the same at all as the authentic incarnation, the life being animated. And so making that distinction is of course just such a huge part of practice, because it feels for all the world like there's just one me. And, you know, I have these moods and I have these things and I get stuck in this. And so to begin to realize that there is a difference between actually being here present when that story, that conversation about I, me, my is not going on. There's that gap, that space, and there's here, and there's just the breath and presence, and I actually see the trees and the sky and that sort of thing. And then there's the distinction that we were just talking about with Lucinda, where there is a human being conditioned, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Karma, you're darn tootin'. And that human being is what we are here to save. So the Buddha said, you know, we each have one person to save, and that's the person that we call I or me. And so that's that what we were pointing at there, that Lucinda is now moving into the mentor role, into becoming the Buddha, being aware of being the unconditional love and acceptance that can mentor and nurture this human being through this process that would be taken over by ego, that would lead to just utter suffering and misery. And instead, from that disidentified place, stepping back into conscious, compassionate awareness, there's a possibility to bring that unconditional love and healing to that human being. Now, the healing is not necessarily a physical healing, because at some point, all of us are going to die. That's no doubt about it. But it's the process that we go through as we're living, as we move more and more into an identification with the intelligence animating us, with the divine, as we become more aware of that as who we are, then we can embrace wholeheartedly, unconditionally, this human being, and that human being is no longer clinging to something that is temporary and unsatisfactory, such as an ego. Yeah. So that's such an important one for us to be watching for, because that's what this is really all about. That's what awareness practice is actually all about, is moving into that unconditional love and acceptance in order to be able to embrace a suffering human being.
Wow. Yes. Yes. And it seems that as we learn to do that practice for ourselves, each of us, then we see everyone, the others, unquote, more clearly. And
that's right.
And we can see their humanity and their authenticity and the ways that conditioning holds them hostage.
That's right. That's right. And not that we do it for this reason, but we can begin to be, we can begin to model that possibility.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Each and every exactly. one of us who have come to practice has on at least one occasion, and probably on many, many occasions, witnessed someone at center. It might have been something that we read, or we might have actually been in the presence of the person. It could have been in a movie where it was depicted in a way that we recognized and it resonated and we felt it deep in our being, and we knew that that's true and real, and we began to pursue it. And that's really what we're doing. So the more we become that unconditional love and acceptance, the more other people can feel that deep inside themselves, and who knows? Who knows? Might just set somebody's foot on a path.
Yes.
So it's
yes,
really service as well as anything else, right? There's nothing selfish about it. It's absolute service.
Yes, yes. And it seems that that's why I practice, and that's why I go to retreats and workshops, to see that modeled so that I can recognize that in myself and learn to know what's what inside.
That's right. That's right. And the more that resonates, the more you recognize that in yourself. Now you know what you're turning attention to. Now you know where you're going, right? That's what when Greta says it drops in. What's needed here is more love. That's when we're referencing that authenticity inside ourselves. We're open to that clarity. It drops in, and we know to follow it.
Wow, that's a big wow.
That's a big wow. It's a big wow kind of a life, isn't it?
It is.
It
a
sure
big wow
is.
Life. Yeah,
thank you so much, life. Michael, for
thank
being here
so
to
much,
help
Jerry.
Us with this big wow life. Talk to you
it's
soon.
Fun. All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. All right. Good night.